Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It ain't the left side or the right side, and it must be the fin side. It ain't the left side.
Thank you, Solo D. Welcome to another episode of On the Fin Side here with Kat and Paul. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Spreaker, iTunes, YouTube, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. I'm Brian Kat NFL. Paul is Fanatic underscore pick on Twitter. We are 20 days away from the NFL draft at the time we're recording this show. Taking a good look at possibly the Dolphins' biggest need on the roster, and that's offensive tackle. Paul, last offseason, the Dolphins traded Laremy Tunsil to the Texans. They let Juwan James walk. They ended up getting a lot of draft capital. But on the other side, they were historically bad on the offensive line. They were 32nd in sacks allowed, 32nd in quarterback hits, 32nd in yards per carry. So a lot of work to be done right now, because after everything the Dolphins have done this offseason, they have Julian Davenport at left tackle and Jesse Davis at right tackle right now.
Yeah, and I'm not going to discount how bad the line is, but I am going to give them a little teensy bit of credit, given the fact that, you know, the yards per carry, there was no running game to speak of. Even when they did open up some holes, it wasn't there. And that does not all fall on their shoulders. But yeah, you and I have talked a lot offline. Given the fact that Rosen is still young and has some potential, given the fact that Ryan Fitzpatrick is still on this roster, the biggest, most glaring need, and the one that I've told you straight up, if the Dolphins don't come away with either a left tackle on day one, a trade for Trent Williams, or some form of an answer at left tackle, this is a failure for me in this draft. And that says a lot to me. I mean, and the only way I'd say maybe you can wait on a left tackle is if you happen to draft two at number five, and then you want to go with maybe, say, and I won't rank him right now, but I think Wirfs comes into play the most for a team that drafts Tua, because he's going to be protecting Tua's blind side as opposed to a lot of these other guys.
Yeah, and I look at that first group of four offensive tackles, and a lot of people have them ranked in different spots. I mean, some people have Tristan Wirfs as the first guy, some people have him as the fourth guy. But overall, I think there's a general consensus on who the top four offensive tackles are, and it's really important that the Dolphins get one of them. And I'm with you on that. If the Dolphins are not in a position to draft somebody at 18, they better be trading up for one of them. So that group, that first group of four players, in no particular order, Tristan Wirfs out of Iowa, Jedrick Wills out of Alabama, Andrew Thomas out of Georgia, Mekhi Becton out of Louisville. Out of those first four, Paul, where would you rank them from one to four?
I'm going to go with Becton first. And a lot of people thought I was crazy a month ago for saying that, but given the fact that he's started the warm up for a lot of folks, given the fact that he's got more sheer size than any individual has a right to, let alone the athleticism to match, and he's in the top four conversation already, and probably has the most opportunity for growth on top of that. So given the fact he's a physical freak and the fact that he's got the most opportunity to grow, Becton's easily at the top of that list for me. I tend to go a little bit back and forth after that. I'd go with Jedrick Wills as my number two. And I really think Andrew Thomas is probably better than Tristan Wirfs. But the caveat I've got there as well is if a team including the Dolphins. I will say that, you know, if the Dolphins draft Tua, I think Wirfs becomes an even bigger target because he's a lot more comfortable on that right side than I think the other three would be.
Yeah, I've got a different order for the first four, but I'm nitpicking because on my Dolphins draft board, I've got them all one after another. So there's not a lot separating them right now. If I had to pick one, I would go with Tristan Wirfs first. To me, he has the highest floor and the highest ceiling. He was a fantastic right tackle at Iowa, and he showed at the combine that he was a great athlete too. Ran a 4.85 40 with a 36.5-inch vert and a 10.1 broad jump. That usually doesn't matter for me with offensive line, but he had a higher vert and a better broad than Jerry Jeudy. So, and also last year when Alaric Jackson went down for Iowa, he slipped to that left tackle spot. So he showed he can play both positions there. Number two, very close, and it depends on whether or not the Dolphins draft Tua or they draft a right-handed quarterback. But if they, as it stands right now, I'm going to barely go with Andrew Thomas out of Georgia. He's somebody that, I really thought, five, 6 months ago was going to be a top five pick easily. Now I'm seeing a mock to the Dolphins at 18, which I would absolutely love. He's a powerful, battle-tested left tackle, long arms, long wingspan, great run blocker, very, very powerful. Not the greatest of feet, but I think he can be coached up on that. And in a worst-case scenario, something Travis Wingfield said a couple of times is that, you might be able to move him into guard because he's so powerful. He also played right tackle as a freshman, so he's got that versatility too. Jedrick Wills from Alabama would be my third guy, but he would be second if the Dolphins took Tua, because he would be a pure right tackle. Great athlete, technically sound, incredible punch. But at the end of the day, I wonder can a 6'4", 312-pound right tackle go top 10? And then fourth is going to be Mekhi Becton for me. He came out of nowhere last year. He's definitely the rawest, but he has the most upside out of this unit. He played some left tackle and right tackle at Louisville too. And Paul, I kind of think with Becton, people overthink these giant offensive linemen because, for example, Bryant McKinney, gosh, a decade ago, 15 years ago now, gosh, he was just so massive and could move so well for his size. Even though he wasn't the greatest of football player, he was so hard to run around.
Exactly. It's if you've got a guy that has the athleticism to stay with a speed rusher and has the body mass to make it more difficult for somebody to just push him out of the way, you're always in at least a decent spot as far as it goes on the line. And I hate to simplify it like that, but you really are. I mean, technique, leverage, they win. But at the same time, you can use the same principle you use with like a Vince Wilfork or a Tim Bowens. Even when they didn't get there, you didn't get them out of the way.
That's for sure. And to even go a step further with that, next generation stats, if you look at the quarterbacks from last year, on average, from the time that the quarterback takes a snap to the time he releases the ball, the average for every quarterback in the league was somewhere between 2.51 seconds and 3.01 seconds. So it takes a really good player on the edge to consistently get around Mekhi Becton. And that's why these big linemen, not just Bryant McKinney 15 years ago, but Morgan Moses from Virginia, Phil Loadholt from Oklahoma, Orlando Brown, Jared Gaither, Colton Miller, these guys who were 6'8", 6'9", it just takes a lot to get around them. And that's where you can start off at the offensive tackle position, even though Mekhi Becton is very, very raw. Paul, on that next group, that's where it starts to get a little bit more muddy. I know I'm higher on the next two guys on my list than you are. How do you make sense out of this next group after these top four tackles?
It's kind of funny. The more I watch of Austin Jackson, as an example, and I know he's the number five guy on a lot of boards out there, the more I watch Austin Jackson, the more I want to see him at guard at least early in his career and see if he can turn into a tackle at some point. See him using his athleticism to pull and fight in the phone booth. And that may or may not be a popular opinion out there, but I'm really getting in that vein. And you actually turned me on a little more to Ezra Cleveland. He's a guy that I definitely think would be a very good fit in Miami and give you that chance to possibly give up a little more if you want to do a trade up, which I would only do for one player. We don't need to beat that to death. That's another 20 shows we've done where I've done that. After that, I do like Niang at a TCU. I think he's a very underrated prospect. And then there's a pretty good drop off. You've got Sadiq Charles. Well, we'll get to all that. We'll get to all that. So back to you on that.
Yeah. Austin Jackson is a OT5 for a lot of people, or OT6. Definitely not for me. Number one on my do not draft list. I mean, that I've got in my head. I watched 4 games of this guy, and one was against Iowa, one was against Utah, and then I watched 2 others. Against Iowa, AJ Epineza beat him for 2.5 sacks. Bradley and I destroyed him at Utah. And then the other game I watched, he did okay. And then the other one, he had a really good game. But I see too much rawness out of him. He's 20 years old. He's a great athlete, but he's but even for being 6'5", 322, there's just too much getting through on the left side. I wouldn't draft this guy to the 3rd round. And I hope the Dolphins don't do what a lot of mock drafts are doing and have him go either 18 or 26. So my OT number 5 is Josh Jones out of Houston. I know I like him more than you do. Oh, great pass protector. What's that?
I completely forgot about Josh.
No. We're going to cover. There's a big group. We're going to get to a lot of these at some point. Great pass protector at Houston for the last 4 years, but didn't face the greatest level of competition. And when you watch him play, you can see some technical flaws out of him. His hand placement's not the greatest. His feet can be all over the place, but I see the physical skills in him. And when he went to senior week for him, he played left tackle, right tackle, great drill. And when you see him, man, he's got a little bit more of that nastiness that some of the other tackles, may not work. So I would all day take him at number 18. And he may be that player that you end up looking at if these top 4 offensive tackles go early. Ezra Cleveland, yeah, like you said, I mean, I've been high on him for a couple of months now. At first glance, when I watched him, I thought, you know, there's not a lot special to this guy's game, and there's not, but it's very effortless what he does. He's 6'6", 311 pounds, and according to PFF, in the last 5 games of the season for Boise State, playing with a turf toe, he allowed no sacks and 2 pressures, which is an incredible rate. And there's also some talk that he might be able to move into guard as well. Either way, I think he's going to succeed on the offensive line.
Yeah, and another guy that I really want to talk about a little bit, because we saw him rise up to the point where he was almost a top 15 prospect for a while. And then he slowly, slowly drifted back to being a late second, early 3rd round pick, potentially even later. And that's Prince Tego Onogo. He's been a very solid player with a 1st round skill set. But he's slid further and further as these underwear Olympics went on, which is always interesting to me to keep an eye on, because at the end of the day, the offensive line is probably the position, and it doesn't matter if you're left tackle, left guard, or center, where at times you can get away with just being a goddamn football player. You look at Richie Incognito. I mean, and I know that's a sore spot for a few fans, but at some point in time, you know, you can get away with being a football player if you've got the right mindset and you've got the right ability. And, you know, Winogo sliding during the underwear Olympics has been mystifying for me. But again, he's a guy that could be a very heavy target if they swing and whiff in round 1, or if they trade way up the board to go after Burrow, like is suddenly a hot rumor that we've been talking about forever.
Yeah, Prince Tega is interesting because he was a very raw player. He's a very raw player at Auburn. I mean, he was a He was a high school basketball star. He came over to this country and he started playing basketball initially. And then in his senior year of high school, he started playing football for the first time. But over the last several years, he's shown a lot of that nastiness at the left tackle position. He's somebody that I'm hesitant on. I like as maybe a fourth or a fifth round prospect. He's very nasty. That's for sure. He can, at the point of attack, he shows the willingness to hit people, but in pass protection and run blocking, I think he's all over the place. Now, on the other side of Auburn's offensive line, somebody that we continue to have projected in our mock drafts and in that third, fourth, fifth round area is Jack Driscoll. I like him a lot at the right tackle spot. 4-year starter, a lot of experience. He's not a great athlete, and he's not the biggest guy at 6'5", 304 pounds, but only allowed one sack in 3 years at Auburn. And he faced some really good competition. And he's also got some versatility to move inside to the right guard spot. But Paul, one player I want to ask you about too is, you're a UConn fan, Matt Pert from UConn, 6'7", 318 pounds, a definite project. But, you know, we've seen him projected, kind of in that second, third round area for some folks.
Yeah, and his technique is usually there. I mean, he's got a little refining to do. The biggest thing that I want to see from Matt at the next level is if he can just get stronger, which you and I have been through the ins and outs of the Dolphins facility. And, you know, we both know the way things are for these pros. It's amazing the resources at their disposal. Even when you've heard about it, seeing it firsthand, you know, down to the littlest thing, like the signs on the Gatorade coolers and everything else. I mean, he would have that opportunity. And the weird thing that hurts Pert for me is the fact that, you know, we're looking at potentially a shortened off season with all the madness going on right now. And so getting him in there into their strength and conditioning program would be the biggest boost to a player like him. So he might become a longer term project based around what's going on right now.
Yeah. Pert is somebody that I really like as an early day three type of guy, where the Dolphins are picking in the fourth round. He's somebody, I don't care if the Dolphins have already drafted two tackles, I would still look at this guy because the talent's so immense. He's right now, he's all arms and legs. He bends awkwardly. He might be able to even kick inside the right guard, but you know, he's also somebody that played 4 years in college, two years at right tackle. More of a developmental type of guy. He has an 86.5-inch wingspan. As a comparison, Josh Jones is 80.5. So he's got a lot to work with there. And I like the developmental tackle in the third, fourth round, not in the first round, like I'm talking about with Austin Jackson. And going down the list here too, two other guys that stick out, Sadiq Charles from LSU. He surprised a lot of people by a coming out as an underclassman to begin with, and after protecting Joe Burrow's blindside. But then he came to the combine and he actually weighed in at 321 pounds, where a lot of people thought he would be 6'4", 295, 300. Instead, he's 6'4.5", 321. He had a lot of off the field issues at LSU, but he's somebody that certainly showed the ability in college. Whether or not he has the long-term ability or he can keep his head on straight, it remains to be seen. Ben Bartsch is somebody really hurt by this pre-draft process that you talked about, Paul. He was starting to look like, kind of like, as PFF said, the Allie Marpet of this draft. Allie Marpet was a second round pick for the Bucks out of Hobart University a couple of years ago, and stepped right in for the Bucks. But Ben Bartsch goes to Senior Bowl week, does a great job against the best in the business, but doesn't have the follow-up now to talk to these different NFL teams. So instead of being a second or third round pick, he may end up being a fourth or a fifth round pick. So a very, very wide class here of different types of offensive tackles.
It is. And, you know, there's a handful of others like Trey Adams out of Washington, who's got some question marks, but I want to go back to Sadiq Charles for a second here. It's, Sadiq Charles almost couldn't afford to stay in college anymore, given the fact that he's shown so many maturity issues, given the fact that he's been suspended from the team. And, you know, there are flashes with him that look like a special talent, and then there are flashes that don't. And the off-field stuff terrifies me because from what I understand and what I hear, it's like he's made the same mistakes over and over again and not learned from them off the field. And, you know, you give somebody like that a few million dollars here to go out and keep their nose clean, it doesn't usually end well.
That's very true. And especially with this roster, the one time the Dolphins made an exception, it was with Mark Walton. And everybody know how that went. You know, other than that, they really have stayed away from guys with the character concerns. So I think you're right. It wouldn't surprise me if Charles was off their board entirely. So, Paul, here's the big question now when it comes to the tackle spot. It's been racking my brain here for the last couple of months. Is, let's say the Dolphins stay at five and take a quarterback. Tua, Jordan Love, Justin Herbert, whoever it is. I don't know if an offensive tackle is falling to that 18th spot. And we've gone through mock drafts that have suggested the same. We've looked at mock drafts that have suggested the same as well. So say the Dolphins pick a quarterback at five. What do you think they should do as far as getting at least one of these offensive tackles?
I think they should very closely monitor the board. I think they should start putting their feelers in to the teams between them and number five. And if there starts to be a run on tackles, they better be able to jump their ass in there and get one. It's any one of these four I'd be happy with on the Dolphins roster. Any one of these four is an improvement on the Dolphins roster. And if you're not going to go up and get somebody, you better be planning to make that trade for Trent Williams, even if you have to give up one of the second round picks to do so.
Yeah, you better do something there. That's for sure. And when I look at the board, the two picks I really look at are the Giants at four and the Cardinals at eight, because at four, I expect the Giants to go offensive tackle. And you've every time you've had them, you've mocked them to get either Mekhi Becton or Tristan Wirfs. And I agree with that. If they don't, and say, let's say they go with Isaiah Simmons instead or somebody else, or they trade down, it's quite possible that the first offensive tackle does not come off the board until pick at least eight with Arizona. And if you start to see those tackles fall down the board, which tends to happen on draft day, that's where the Dolphins need to be right in there and be willing to trade a second or a third round pick to leap up a few spots for a Tristan Wirfs, for an Andrew Thomas, for a Jedrick Wills, for a Mekhi Becton, because they've got to at least get one of these positions correct.
They do. And while you were talking, I have a hypothetical for you. Mm-hmm. If Chris Greer decides it's Burrow or bust at quarterback in this year's draft, or there's somebody in the late rounds he wants to go at quarterback, or he just wants to ride it with Rosen and Fitzpatrick and is just dead set against going quarterback at number five, would you be upset if his alternative, and not upset that he didn't go quarterback, but just at least as far as his alternative goes, he were to take one of these four offensive tackles at fifth overall?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say, look, at pick number, when you're picking fifth after all of this, if you don't come mm-hmm. away with a quarterback in a draft when you're going to have four of the top 15 picks be quarterbacks in this draft likely, that's going to be a little bit hard for me to swallow, because I think Josh Rosen has to be viewed as really a bonus at this point. But the alternative to that, and while I'm pretty open-minded about this whole thing, is that if they said, look, we like Josh Rosen a lot more than a lot of people thought, and we're willing to go with a left tackle at five, and then we're going to come away with one of these other talented players at the right tackle spot. And also maybe you can draft Cesar Ruiz late in the first or early in the second round, because you have the picks to do that. I can see that working. Really, any scenario other than Justin Herbert at number five, I'm pretty open on.
No, I'm with you. It's, I mean, I think I even actually in one of our mocks had the Dolphins select Mekhi Becton at number five. It's, you know, if the Dolphins believe in Josh Rosen, or if they don't believe in Tua for medical, Herbert for football, you know, if they believe it's too much of a reach to take Love fifth overall, and they decide to go ahead and rebuild the offensive line from there, I'm not going to be upset if they take any of these four guys. Personally, as we outlined at the start of the show, I'd prefer it be Becton or Wills at number five. But again, it's a scenario where I'd be okay with them trading back a little bit and seeing which of them fall if they've got them graded as closely as you and I do. And you know, maybe trade down with Jacksonville, accumulate a little bit, be able to rebuild that offensive line. I got news for you, Josh. Josh Rosen's biggest issue was time to make decisions. So if you've got a line that can give him time to make decisions, he might be better than we all expected, even if he didn't improve his speed at decision making last year.
Yeah, I mean, just 2 years ago now, Josh Rosen was the 10th overall pick in the draft. And at the very least, for even people that weren't the biggest fan of him coming out, he hasn't gotten an opportunity yet. He's 23 years old now, and he has played behind the two most historically bad offensive lines in back-to-back years. So there is some promise there. From what everything we've heard coming out of training camp, and what we saw materialize throughout the season, I don't know if the team is there on Josh Rosen. But I then again, maybe they just don't know about him yet either. So I still think the Dolphins are coming away with a quarterback here in the top five. And I know you're feeling that way too, even though it's not something specifically that you would probably do. But you've got to get this offensive line right. There's no doubt about that. Because if you look back, historically, for the Dolphins over the last 10 to 12 years, when they've spent the draft picks on the offensive line, Jake Long, Vernon Carey, Mike Pouncey, these types of players, Juwan James, when they've spent the resources to get them, they've gotten good players. When they haven't and they thought they could get something for nothing, like Billy Turner, Dallas Thomas, Josh Sitton, these type of players did not pan out.
No, they didn't. And you know, and I've got news for the Tua fans out there. And look, if Tua ends up in the Dolphins, I'll root for him just as hard as anybody else. If Tua ends up in Miami, I don't want to use the word injury prone. I'm not quite to that point with him, but he has an injury history enough that, and he's got this surgically repaired hip now that he's supposedly going to be ready to play on for August, September-ish, because he gave his word that he is. So good for him. But if Tua is your quarterback, you should be praying as well that the next three or four picks are predominantly offensive line. You want to put as much talent to protect somebody that's already got an injury history with his legs from taking those hits on the regular basis as you possibly can. Miami's got receiver talent. We've talked about that in a previous episode. Yeah, Miami does need a running back. We've talked about it in a previous episode, how there are options to improve that position later on in the draft as well, even though there's some very talented guys that are going to be there in the second round.
Well, yeah, and Paul, there's no shame in saying Tua is injury prone. And the question from that point is, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to take the risk on that or not? And whether it's Tua, Jordan Love, or God forbid, Justin Herbert at five, or at least for me, that with these three specific quarterbacks, Tua because of the injury, Jordan Love because he's a small school quarterback and you know, when he's pressured, he can make poor decisions. And then Justin Herbert, who had the best offensive line in college football at Oregon and still made poor decisions. You've got to keep either any of these three healthy, and you've got to keep them upright and have them with time to make better decisions there. On the other hand, with Joe Burrow, and that's the other side of this, if the Dolphins end up, and I don't think they will at the end, I put it at about 15% that they would end up trading up for Joe Burrow. The difference with Joe Burrow is that he can sense the pressure a lot better than these other three quarterbacks. So he's not as dedicated on his offensive line as these other three quarterbacks, at least based on what they showed in college.
Yeah. And I mean, it's funny because Joe Burrow probably had the best offensive line amongst all four of them. And, you know, but he also is a guy that completed the most under pressure. But that's another show. I've taken us down a rabbit hole here. My biggest point here is you've got to protect these guys. But push comes to shove, you need to protect Tua a little bit more based on the history and invest more into protecting Tua. Even though you want to invest in protecting your franchise quarterback, Tua needs it more than most, because at the end of the day, if you don't draft people to protect Tua, you're just going to go back to either Fitzpatrick or Josh Rosen starting anyway. So you might as well not.
Without question, if you start Tua's career off in 2020, provided he gets on the field with Austin Jackson at left tackle and Jesse Davis at right tackle, you're asking for trouble. There's no doubt about that. And we will end on that note. You can follow Paul and I on the Finside on Facebook, Twitter, Spreaker, iTunes, YouTube, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. I am Brian Katt, NFL. Paul is Fanatic_pick. And be sure to tune in to the rest of our positional breakdowns, too, for the Dolphins. We've got a lot of good stuff coming up here. And if it's not on the right side and it's not on the left side, it is on the Finside. So, Ladie, take us home.
It ain't the left side or the right side, and it must be the Finside. It ain't the left side or the right side. And it must be the fifth. Listen, Dolphins fans across the land all tuning in to see what Brian Katt and Paul about to do again.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.